Well, a question just to begin. How many of you feel a tension between your work and your relationships? Let me ask it a different way. How many of you feel a tension between work and to-do lists and all you have to accomplish over here, and then like the quality of your relationships and your availability to the people you love at home, wherever? Anybody feel that? Yeah, and as we said a couple weeks ago, that efficiency and productivity don't always go great with relationships, because relationships take time and space and availability and are often slow, which again can create tension. If you're married, right, that can create tension with a spouse, with family. If you have kids, it can be stressful enough, like just getting everything else done. And then, oh yeah, there's being present at home. And really this applies to any close relationship. But do you ever feel like you're kind of being pulled in two different directions and you can't win no matter what you do? Or how about this? You can win at work, but that means you're losing where? Yeah, like you're not there, you're missing stuff. Your spouse complains every once in a while, you know, it feels like I'm a single parent. Or your kids are saying, why are you always working, mom, dad? Why are you always on your computer? Or we feel like we can win at home, but then we lose at work, right? Because there's stuff maybe we're not getting done, or we're letting our boss or a coworker down, or there's more we could be doing, or we're missing out on opportunity. So hopefully everyone, or most of us, are kind of aware of this tension. Also, hopefully by now you have seen the 1991 film Hook. Yes. I hope. It's Steven Spielberg's take on Peter Pan. And if you haven't seen it, I'm not even going to say I'm ruining anything, because it's literally almost 30 years old, okay? Which, let that sink in. In the movie, Peter Pan, before he knows he's Peter Pan, is played by Robin Williams, and he's like this busy executive, like classic type A, driven, workaholic, right? And you kind of get a sense on where his priorities are in the opening scenes, like he's at his daughter's play and he pulls out a crazy cell phone, like before people had cell phones, because he's got to do business. Or, you know, he tells his son, I'm going to be at your baseball game. I'll be there. My word is my bond. Remember that? And something comes up, and so he has to send one of his guys from work to the game with a giant 90s camcorder to record it so he can watch it on a tape later. Anyway, at the beginning, to set the whole thing up, he goes with his family to London. I don't know why. I should know why he takes his family. I've seen it 10,000 times. But anyway, he's there. They have family there, whatever. He has work to do. And the point is, things are seriously strained between Peter and his wife and his kids. And whenever he's around, there's just all this tension and kind of stress that he brings with him. And so I want to show you this clip from the beginning, sort of the initial breaking point.
Brad, good news? What? What's the Air Club report? I thought we had these guys.
Listen,
what did they find?
Peter, that's a portable phone.
Crazy blue owl?
Well, listen.
Ben! Here, Meg! I'm down here!
Tell them there have always been casualties of evolution. Ask them if anybody misses the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, I do! Boy, do I ever! Wow!
Oh, wait a minute. You're telling me a 10-inch owl has a 50-mile mating radius? Why don't they just fornicate someplace else? You're telling a $5 billion deal falling apart because of this? Why doesn't somebody just shoot me in the head?
Bang! Bang!
Will everybody just shut up?
I'm sorry.
And leave me alone for one moment more. Get him out of here, will you? I'm on the phone call of my life.
Come on, Jack. Come on. Come on.
Mommy. I'll show you the window where your father and Mommy. I used to stand and blow out the stars.
I never should have come here. I should have stayed till the deal was done.
You haven't been here for 10 years, though Granny asks you to visit every year.
I've been a little busy, Maura.
You promised the children some real time here.
I just got here. What are you talking about?
Examine them or yell at them.
It's not true.
How many more broken promises, Peter?
I'm sorry. It's Brad, Maura. I gotta take this call. I gotta fix this.
No, you gotta fix your family first. About your deal.
You hated the deal.
I hated the deal, but I'm sorry you feel so badly about it. Your children love you. They want to play with you. How long do you think that lasts? Soon Jack may not even want you to come to his games. We have a few special years with our children when they're the ones that want us around. After that, you're going to be running after them for a bit of attention. And it's over. And you are not being careful. And you are missing it.
All right. So that's what we're doing. By the way, that movie, when it first came out, I was like the age of the boy. And so I related to the kids, right? And the dad's like the villain. Well, now my kids are like older than those kids. And I really, all of a sudden, I'm like, huh. Like I find myself kind of relating to the dad. And anyway, that's an extreme example. But the point is, many of us feel the tension between our work responsibility and our responsibilities at home and in our relationships. And look, we're doing our best. Right, we just don't have margin. There's no space, and we're running back and forth. And sometimes it feels like all we do is put out fires between the two places. And after a while, we realize I'm not doing anything very well. Right, I'm kind of disappointing or hurting, upsetting people at home, and at the same time, I'm dropping the ball like at work. And so, no matter how hard we try, we have this sense sometimes that we can't win, that we can't seem to find the balance. Does anybody in the room know what I'm talking about? Two people. Two people shook their head, yes. Okay. I know there's more than that, but it's painful, right? So what do we do with that? Now, one of the things that God knows about each one of us in this room, because he's God and he created us, is we all have an innate, almost compulsion, tendency to exceed our limits. That God knows, left to our own devices, we'll find like the limit, the edge, and we'll push right up to it. Like what's healthy, what's wise, what's even possible. And sometimes, often, push past that. I mean, this goes way, way back to the very beginning, right? Like the garden. It's like, oh God, so you're saying there, like this whole place is ours to... like this immense, lush garden and any of these trees, that's so generous. What's that? There's one tree we have to avoid? Oh, and it's for our benefit? You're trying to help us out? Why don't you just tell us that first? Let's start with that one, right? We're not great with limits. Speed limits, financial limits, limits God gives us for our own good. We just push past oftentimes. We do this with our time, where we have X amount of time, and we think to ourselves, yeah, but if I hurry, I can accomplish this much. We do the same with opportunities. We don't want to miss out. We don't want to fall behind, and so we say yes. We overcommit. We habitually exceed our limits. And by the way, at the end of the day, we know this, that we're the ones who suffer. Like God's saying, I'm giving you these limits for your benefit, for your best interest, and yet we pay the price. Our health suffers, the quality of our relationships goes down, we don't even enjoy the things that we are doing. The other thing God knows about us, and I think this is a really big part of what drives us to exceed our limits, in the first place, we have another sort of tendency, and that is we think we control our destiny. We think our fate is entirely in our hands. And if I work hard enough, if I'm prepared enough, if I pursue enough, if I, you know, go, whatever it is for you, then things are going to be okay and that it will all work out. And so, as we said a couple weeks ago, what's behind a lot of this is fear. Fear that we're going to fall behind. Fear that we're going to miss out. Fear that we don't matter or that we're insignificant, and that drives us to overcommit and be busy. There's another factor in this, and maybe you can see it. Behind the fear or along with that is maybe a little bit of arrogance. Just a touch of pride. I got this. I'm in charge. I don't have to pay attention to my limits. I'm superhuman, and I kind of decide where things go, and I'm in charge of my future. And in our arrogance, and I'm joking, I think it is arrogant, we forget one person. God. Oh yeah, there is someone who maybe can influence. There is someone who maybe knows how I'm created and perhaps has a say in my future and where things go, that he has influence over that. So all that to say, God knows our issues, and in his grace and in his mercy, he comes alongside of us and he says, I want to help teach you a painful lesson that you have limits. And one of the ways that he does this, and we'll see it first in the Old Testament, but is he says, I want to give you some very concrete, very tangible practices. And every time you do these practices, it is going to remind you, almost like a ritual, that you're not as in control as you think you are. So let me give you some practices and some ways to kind of counter these assumptions that we have. And then that's the Old Testament. I'm going to show you a couple examples. And then in the New Testament, the conversation continues with Jesus. And we see, as we said a while ago, it really comes down to faith. That what's at work here in our fear and in our pride is, do we believe, like Jesus says, that God cares about us and that he sees our needs and that he knows my name, that he cares for me as an individual? So, again, this gets really practical. I want to give you three quick examples from the Old Testament. First one, this is back a long time ago, way, way back, when the nation of Israel was coming out of Egypt, out of slavery. They were delivered. They were a slave state. And this is almost impossible for us to understand completely. They were slaves. When they left Egypt and followed Moses toward the promised land, all they had ever known was slavery for 400 years. And so God rescues his people. He leads them out into the wilderness, and he gives them a whole new set of rules. Because prior to this point, all they had was like slave rules. He says, no, I'm making you into a new people. Here's the new rules. He gives the law. He gives part of that's the Ten Commandments. And one of the big ones is known as the Sabbath. And we're used to that one because Chick-fil-A is closed on Sunday. Yeah, so what it is, it's a day where God says, do no work. And actually, in our culture, what's interesting is we don't just have one day. We don't just have Saturday. We have Saturday and Sunday. Like, we have 2 days. So this is kind of built into, in some ways, our society, at least at some level. But here's what's impossible for us to understand. How staggering and how mind-blowing this would have been for the people who first received this. You're telling me to take one day and to like blow the whole day off. God says, yeah. Quick question, God, what are we going to eat? There's so much work to be done. Like, how can we possibly do this? We'll starve. And God says, nope. For one day, I want you to do no work. And the point is God is trying to teach his people in a very, very tangible, practical, in-your-face kind of way, I want you to trust me. Yeah, but God, but what if? Trust me. God, what if on our day off, you know, the day before we don't bring in the harvest, we don't get the crops in, and it like floods. And trust me. It was an expression of faith. God's saying someone else besides you in your effort is involved in your future. And so God's trying to teach that. Here's another one. God instituted a tithe. And they didn't have banks back then, so here's what they would do. You're in a Hebrew home, ancient times. You would set aside a portion of your income, 10%. Some scholars say it was closer to 20%, that you would then give to the temple and give to the poor and the continuation of the worship and in the temple and that kind of thing. Well, there are places where people would do that like once a year. And so there would be a jar or a box in the home, and you'd put this in, and it was like this daily visual reminder that, like, just because it comes in doesn't mean it goes out. That we don't spend, or we shouldn't spend, everything that comes in. And by the way, we could use that money. It's just sitting there. Right? You see how that's a very tangible reminder that God's saying, I want there to be space, I want there to be a little bit of a gap where you go, oh, I got to trust, because it doesn't work out any other way. Third example, and again, this one is just as tangible, but it's a little bit lesser known. It's called the law of gleaning. Again, God is forming this brand new society, and he wants it to be the society like the way that he wants it. And you can imagine in this culture, you're living basically hand to mouth, no refrigeration, food doesn't last very long. By and large, people in this day are, like, by our standards, way, way, way poor. And they don't have like a bunch of extra, okay? Everybody needs everything that they can possibly get. And you're a farmer. And the way that you make your money is by selling your crops. And these aren't like huge, giant mega fields. These are smaller operations, you know, managed by hand by, you know, a handful of people. And here's what God says. Here's the law he institutes. Leviticus 19. When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Now, the gleanings would be like the wheat or whatever it was you were harvesting that sort of accidentally dropped to the ground. But it was still good. You could still eat it. 5-second rule. God says, don't pick that up. Don't pick up what drops. And don't reap the harvest all the way to the edges of your fields. Just leave it there. And then he says in the next verse, do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. He says, once you go through and you pick all the grapes, if you miss some, don't go back and get them. And don't harvest to the edge of your fields. Leave it there. To which we would say, excuse me, that's money on the table. Also, that's mine. And that's how I make a living. And that's how we survive. And God says, no. Don't go through it twice. Leave the edges for people who are in need. And then look how he finishes the law. Very next thing. It says, because I am the Lord your God. To which we would say, excuse me, was there a paragraph break? Like, did you change the subject? Like, what does that have to do with leave the grapes and don't go back a second or third time? And here it is. God is saying, I want you to trust me, which means, and this is where it starts to feel a little more relevant to all of us, I don't want you pushing everything in your life to the limit just because you can. I want there to be space, and in that space, I will meet you. And that's where you'll know God will take care of us. Something similar in Deuteronomy chapter 24, God says, when you're harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, do not go back to get it. Oh, you missed one. Oh, look over there, you missed one. Go get it. You better go get it. Isn't that what we would say? Of course, because it's like our stuff. We want all of them. And God says, no, leave it. Don't go back and get it. Leave it for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow. And then listen to what he says. So that, check this out, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. Let me get this straight. You're saying that it's the work of our hands, my hands, right? You just said that. Which means it makes sense that we then need to go all the way to the corners, that we need to go over the fields or the vineyards three times if necessary to make sure that we've gotten everything that belongs to us and so that we're good stewards. And God says, no, that's not the way it works. I want you to leave some, essentially, on the table. I want you to leave some extra. I want you to walk away and not take it to the limit of what you could get, because I want you to learn to trust me. Can you imagine how difficult that would be? Can you imagine all the, well, what about this? And what about that? And what about famine? God says, I want to provide for you, but you have to learn to trust me. Essentially, he's saying, you think you control your destiny. Don't we kind of think that? Essentially, what he's saying is, left to your own devices, and he's talking to people back then, but there's some application for us for sure today. Left to our own devices, we will work basically 24/7, 7 days a week. Right? Because we want things to work out for us. Left to our own devices, we will spend 100% of what comes in, or set it aside for later. And we, by the way, there's never enough to make us feel good. Left to our own devices, we will harvest to the very edge. We'll go over things twice to make sure we get what is ours. And God says, let me give you some reminders that the future is not up to you. Practice Sabbath, practice tithing, practice the law of gleaning. Can you imagine that? So they're going, okay, I'm starting to see a theme. I'm starting to see a picture. God, are you saying that you don't want us to do everything that we could do so that you can then bless what we did do? Is that, yeah. That, so you're saying, let me just say it again, we're not supposed to do everything that we could do, exceed the limit, go. We don't do everything we could do so that you can bless or maybe even multiply the work that we did do. And God's like, that's exactly it. I want there to be space, because then you have to trust me. Well, that's the Old Testament, right? Old Testament, Jesus comes along and then says, just forget it. Forget all that, you're actually on your own, so get busy. He doesn't say that. Hey, that's not what he does. He kind of continues the theme in sometimes more generalized or sometimes abstract ways, but the principle is still the same. He says in Matthew 6, so do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. And you see what he's saying? He's like, why are you killing yourself and exceeding limits and chasing after all these things? It's not actually up to you. And in the process of harvesting your life to the very edges, you're missing the kingdom. And your relationship with God is suffering, we would say yes, and our relationship with other people is being impacted. In Luke 12, he says, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. To which we would say, I'm not greedy. I don't think I'm greedy, right? Nobody thinks they're greedy. Have you ever met somebody who goes, my problem is I'm a greedy person? No, it's just not, it's one of those that everybody else, but not me. Then he goes on, he says, life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. Now that one we go, I kind of do think that sometimes. Here's the question, a little experiment. What if Jesus was right? I know I say this all the time, but like, what if Jesus actually knew what he was talking about? I know, it's like a little, let's just imagine for a second, right? We forget that Jesus was the most intelligent teacher ever, and that his teachings are not just like right in some arbitrary moral sense. They're true and they're good, and they also correspond to reality. Like what he's telling us for our own benefit, it lines up with the way the world actually is. Now, whether or not we believe him and live accordingly is another thing entirely. I heard someone say once, your standard of living does not equal your quality of life. That is very foreign in our culture. It took me a minute to like, wait, what is the difference between? Right, your standard of living, the house that you live in, the car you drive, the clothes you wear, the vacation, the food you eat, all that stuff, does not equal, is different than your quality of life. Things like our health, and our relationships, and our ability to enjoy, and our sense of significance and meaning. We think just because this goes up, that this automatically increases. Now, at some level, like at a basic level, you gotta have food, shelter, basic things. You gotta have basic things here for this to be, right? But beyond that, and many of us have moved beyond that, let me ask you this. How many of you've got a nicer house or car, or better clothes, or you vacation or whatever than you used to? You don't have to raise your hands, but isn't it funny that, and you've heard maybe your parents do this, and I've found myself doing this sometimes, those stories that you tell of just starting out, and you're finding change in the cushions of the couch to survive, right, to pay your electric, you know that? Isn't it funny that many of us, not all of us, but many of us tell those stories with almost fondness? You've heard your parents do that? Remember back when we had to, that was relatively low, and yet the way that you talk about it, it sounds like there was something about this. And what's interesting for some of us in this room, as this has gone up, we're more stressed than ever before. We're busier than ever before. We don't enjoy the things. We find less enjoyment in what we're doing. This is from an author named Kara Powell. The Fuller Institute did a study where they asked kids, what would you change about your parents if you could? Don't ask my kids that, please. And it was interesting, their response, you think that they're going to say, I wish my parents didn't work so much, and that was on the list, or I wish my parents were home to like play with me more, and that, you know, that kind of stuff. The number one, by far, number one answer that kids said, they said, I wish mom and dad weren't so stressed out. Because kids are smart, and they feel like it changes the atmosphere, the tone in the home. And ironically, one of the reasons our stress goes up and our quality of life goes down is because we're pursuing these things because we want our kids to have the best and all that. That's great. And then ironically, all they want is for us to be less stressed. You see? Can you see that problem that we've gotten ourselves into? Now, back to the question we started with. This tension we feel between our work and our relationships, or maybe at home. I joked the other day about pastors only working one day a week, and you guys laughed. You laughed, and I saw it. That was dumb. Okay. Now, like many of you in this room, I love what I do. I typically don't wake up on Monday going, oh, come on. No, I really enjoy it. I feel like this, for the most part, it fits like how I'm made and how wired and all that stuff, and it energizes me. And also, like you, I have more to do at work. I know it's church work, and sometimes people feel weird about that, but it feels like work sometimes. I have more to do at work than I can ever get done, which means I leave in the evening or late afternoon or whatever, and like I have emails I still have to return. Phone calls I didn't get to. Sorry about that. I'll call you back. A sermon that is like I'm behind on or whatever it is. At the same time, I love my wife. I love our kids. And I love to go home. And like you, there is more to do at home than we'll ever get done. I don't know about you, but my kids have never said to me, Dad, I think you've played with us like enough now. Why don't you run inside and see if you can get some work done? Right? And that has never crossed their mind. never once has my wife Liz complained about me coming home too early, or you're doing too much. You know, you're doing too much around the house. That doesn't happen, of course. You all have several important responsibilities. You have career potential to fulfill. If you're married, you know, spouse, if you have kids, other friendships, ministries, things that you're passionate about, involved in. I mean, the list goes on and on. And each one of those things is important. Not just to you, but some of it's like, it's important to the world. Like, none of it should be neglected. However, when you consider that you have limited hours in the day, limited time, you realize there is no way you could fulfill your full potential in all of it. There's not enough time. It can't be done. Your situation is not that different than mine. If you stayed at work until everything was done, everything, and you'd maximized your potential and you'd worked on what needed working on and you pursued this and, you know, you did everything you could possibly do, do you realize you'd never go home? If you stayed at home until all of your love was poured out in all the appropriate places and you kept giving until every emotional need was met and you did every chore and you finished the honey-do list and you were, you know, you did everything necessary to ensure that everyone felt loved, do you realize you'd never go to work? And if you're a parent, you know that your kids alone could demand every waking hour, like if you let them. And then you add to that like fitness or health goals or hobbies or friendships. The list is endless, and so are the time requirements. Now, you ready for some good news? Because that's discouraging, isn't it? I want to take some pressure off of you. Your problem, my problem, at least in this case, is not a discipline problem. Your problem, my problem, it's not that you need a better organizational system. It's not that, like, if I could just get the right app or the right calendar thing, the format, if I could just kind of tweak my schedule a little bit, then this could all work out. And it's not even that the folks at home are demanding too much of your time. The problem is we are limited human beings. There's not enough time. Full stop. There's not enough time to do everything you're convinced or others have convinced you that you need to do, which means someone or something is not going to get what they want from you. Maybe what they need from you. Maybe what they deserve from you, and certainly not what everyone expects from you. There's not enough time in your day to be all things to all people, which means you are going to have to disappoint somewhere. If we don't recognize this up front, and we assume that there is enough time, and if I just push hard enough, I can keep all the plates spinning, what happens when we drop the ball is we tend to then, our knee-jerk response is just to attend to, like, whatever wheel is the squeakiest. Whoever creates the biggest mess around us, we just, okay, I guess that's who gets my attention. We keep running from fire to fire, troubleshooting our way through life. See, until we grasp that our time and our attention are limited, that we have to live within these limits and therefore disappoint people, chances are we're not going to change. Chances are we hear this and we go, all right, I need to spend more time at home. I need to spend whatever it is. And let me just ask, honestly, haven't you tried that? Haven't you tried trying harder? I'm going to redouble my efforts. I got this new app and it's going to just kind of overhaul everything. And I got a new system and this is new year, new me. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not going to work. Because you're still in denial about this. Now, we know this, that life is a series of choices. Every yes is like a no to 1,000 other things. As Anne Lamott reminds us, no is a complete sentence. So we can practice that later. No. No? No. Okay. Here's the question, though, this raises. Who are we going to disappoint? Who? And this is where it gets really hard. And you thought that was hard. That wasn't. This is where it gets difficult. We remember how we started with this, that we think we control our destiny? And God's trying to free us from playing God, right? And saying, no, I want you to trust me, and you're carrying a burden that you are not meant to carry, and it's like killing you. James, the brother of Jesus, says, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. You're not in control. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Now, we are not as in control as we think we are. And what ends up happening when we believe this is, instead of living within limits and doing what we can do and be healthy and trusting God then to go, I need you to do something because there's a gap here, we decide to live like our well-being, our future, our security, it all depends on us. Here's what I know about you. Nobody here wants to disappoint the people you love. Nobody wakes up and goes, I kind of feel like disappointing my family today. So we're all like, that's all of us. None of us want to do this. But here's the problem. Our destiny for most of us, when we think about that, our future, what that brings up for a lot of us is work, success, accomplishment, higher standard of living, etc. So what happens is, while we don't want to disappoint our family, we feel like we can't disappoint work. We feel like we don't have a choice. And so we end up choosing work over our family. We sacrifice time with our family. We sacrifice relationship with our spouse or kids or significant other. And look, I get it. I get why we gravitate toward work. This is not a big secret. You know why? Because at work we like get stuff done and we accomplish things and sometimes people applaud us and we feel like we're a part of something bigger and we're like a part of a team and we feel appreciated and we get feedback and all these kind of nice things. You spend 2 hours at home and you're just home. That's kind of funny. You're just there. Right? You don't have a lot to show for it. Nobody gives you an award for like, hey, you made it home for dinner. Wow, way to go. You tucked your kids in, or you were like emotionally present to your family. Maybe this picture will help. Every single time we neglect a responsibility that we have, something that essentially as a parent, as a spouse, that only we can do, essentially what we're doing is we are handing a rock. I just want you to have this visual as you go. We're handing a rock to our spouse, to our kids, to this person that we care about. And we're saying to them, can you please hold this? And what do they say? Okay. Yeah. And by the way, one of the reasons we kind of choose to disappoint them instead of work is because we know they love us. And we know they understand. And we know that they know that we're trying. And so we say, can you please hold this rock? I'm so sorry. I won't miss again. Or things will get better, I promise, in the future. Or, you know, the next season or whatever it is. And kind of we have our promises and we have our reasons why things are going to change. And they do. And they hold the rock for us. The problem is, the longer they hold it, or the more rocks we pile on, eventually what happens? I'm not going to drop it through the stage, but something breaks. Something has to give. And sometimes when that happens, like the damage can't actually be fixed. And suddenly your spouse doesn't want you to come home. See what I'm saying? There's distance between you and a teenager that you can't figure out how to repair. When we choose work over our family, it's a terrible trade. And I realize there's all kinds of pushback to this. And yes, we got to provide and we've got to put a roof over, you know, our family's head and all of that. And there's lots of what ifs and what abouts and that kind of thing. My point is, many of us, we already have those things. This is about something else for us. This is about I'm chasing some destiny, if I can achieve enough or accomplish enough, then I'll feel significant and I'll feel like I matter, and I don't want to hand the rock to my family, but I promise it's just for now. I just have to make this sacrifice, and in the future it'll be better. And I'm just saying, it's not going to change. It's not going to change until or unless we're willing to experience that gap. You realize that surveys say, and people that work in like hospice care and that kind of thing, the number one regret that people have when they're dying, like the top one or two or three, and this is like across the board, is almost always, I wish I didn't work so much. I wish I'd spent more time with my kids or with my family when I had the chance. We know this. That's not new to anybody here. We know it, and yet the reason we don't do it is because it's a risk to not do everything that you could do. It actually feels like a leap of faith to not push your life to the limit and to not play God and to step back and to say, I'm going to do what I can do and be healthy, and that's it. I am not going to do everything that I could do so that God can have space to bless me in the work that I actually did do. By the way, who actually holds the power to bless you and to open doors and to provide opportunity and to see things that you can't see coming and to arrange circumstances and do all of these things? Is it you? Is it me? No. So we might as well honor the one who actually does have this level of influence. Not only that, those of you here who've experienced, you've lived a while, you've experienced some success, some good things have kind of gone your way in your life. You know what's funny for many of us? If we actually were honest, we'd go, I mean, yeah, I worked hard and I was there and I showed up, but like then I got this phone call or I met this person who connected me to this person or whatever, and it's like, I actually had very little to do. It just kind of happened, right? Here's another way of saying it. Those of you who would say, I kind of like where I am or how this area has turned out or whatever. If I could take that and then take you back in time 10 years, 20 years ago and say, here's where you're gonna end up. And it's great, it's awesome, you're gonna love it, right? Now, good luck, get there. You'd have no idea the road or the path to take. My point is, we might as well trust the one who does know, who does control these things, who does have influence. What this means very practically as we close, it means deciding ahead of time where our limits are. This is how much I can work and be healthy. This is what time off looks like for me on a regular basis. This is what time I'm going to come home and, you know, I'm going to eat dinner with my family. I'm going to be there to tuck my kids in. You know the thing about the Sabbath and the tithe and the law of gleaning? Do you know why it worked? Because you had to decide that ahead of time. It was already done. It's not the thing that we do where we get into it and we go, oh, I can kind of this and that. Maybe I'll figure it out. And we just on the fly, and, well, I just need to be disciplined. No, it happens by deciding well ahead of time where the line is and what we're going to do. Deciding ahead of time, I know I'm going to have to disappoint someone somewhere. And I'm not going to default to dropping these rocks into the hands of my family and disappointing them, which is where the default is. So that might mean just very practically getting creative. That's the nice thing about a limit, is when you decide ahead of time, if you don't have a limit, it's just kind of like, oh, I don't know, anything. What? A limit forces you to go, okay, Okay, now I know what we're dealing with. Now I know where the line is. Time to get busy being creative, right? It's amazing what you think of when you actually have some limits. Creating space has to happen first. If you wait to create space until you kind of just see what happens, there's no space. It's gone. So we do it on the front end. Perhaps it's having some tough conversations. This is an area of my life where I'm not by any means saying that I've perfected this. It's something that I have, and my wife and I, we've had a lot of conversations, and I have worked really hard on what does this look like in a job, at least for me, that feels endless. And a lot of mistakes and a lot of, man, I said yes to way too many things, and I too many times live like it was in my hands, right? And so, I mean, it came to a place where, you know, even a couple years ago, where it's like, if I can't do this differently, if I can't do this in a way that is more healthy, then maybe I need to do something different, right? And that's okay. That's sometimes an option, isn't it? Like, I can't be healthy and be in this environment, and maybe we need to consider that. If you're here and you're going, hey, this all sounds nice for like the boss, or like if you're, you know, a business owner and you're not like a slave to the man where you have no choice, right? I just will say, I am convinced we have more agency and we have more options than we sometimes think. There's a book for you, if that's you, by Andy Stanley called When Work and Family Collide. If you'd rather believe you have no choice and there's no options and you're just stuck and you're doomed to have to choose work over your family forever, then don't read this book. It's small. You can read it in like an hour and a half, one setting. When Work and Family Collide, I dare you to read it. Last thought for spouses, parents, from Andy. He says, nobody should feel like they're competing with your job for attention or affection. Operative word, feel like. Not that they're not actually competing, because we'd all say, well, of course you're not competing for my... That they don't feel like they're competing for our attention, our affection. Just by show of hands, how many of you have had the same job for like the last 20 years? A few of you. In first service was a bunch of people, and I said, put your hand down, you're messing up my illustration. Most of us, the rest of us in this room, at some point that means that you were, unless you haven't had a, you're in college or you're a student, you don't have a job yet. It means that you are working a job now that you didn't used to. Or you've, at some point you were working a job you don't work anymore. And you know what's funny? And even if you've been there for 20 years, at some point you're not going to be there. And as big of a part of your life as that is, and you go home and you talk about the people and it like drives your life and there's all this, when you're done working there, or you statistically after 5 or 10 years, you're on to the next job, or the next, you don't care about those people at all. There are people that you work with right now that I'm telling you, there will be a point in your life when you go, what was that woman's name? And you spend every day working, and it just, because it's actually not as big of a deal. It's not as core as we think it is. And yes, work is, by the way, a gift from God. And so we do what we were given to do, and it's an honor and it's a privilege. But it's not everything. And so my challenge is, and what this means is, don't sacrifice like the one thing or two things that only you can do for a job that someday somebody else is going to have. If you're a father or a mother, that is uniquely you. You're going to be a parent the rest of your life. I'm going to be a dad always. Someone else someday is going to pastor this church, right? First of all, I'm not going to live forever. I'll always be a dad, always be a husband. All right, would you stand with me? Let's pray. Lord, we just ask for wisdom, and maybe more than anything, just some courage to do what we know we need to do. Lord, we recognize this is actually not about just discipline or systems or organization, that there are perhaps some things that are driving our busyness and our overcommitment, our constant exceeding our limits that you've given us. Lord, I pray that you would help us to live more healthily, more wisely, more in line with how you've made us. May we live in our proper place, acknowledging you ultimately are in control. That we do not determine our destiny, but there are things that are beyond us. And so we submit to you, we honor you, the one who does control these things. Lord, give us the courage to create some space on the front end. And we know that's going to be hard, and we know we're going to have to disappoint some people and have some difficult conversations and maybe lower our standard of living or whatever else comes with that. May we just get to a place where we say, whatever happens, we're going to do the right thing, and we're going to live so that we don't look back and have just regret that we missed the most important things. Give us strength, give us courage. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, thanks for being here. Hope you all have a great week, and we'll see you next time.